Welcome to the Millennial Soul Food Podcast. I'm your host, Keon. And on today's show, episode 9, it's a reunion show with Juju from A Little Juju Podcast. Enjoy. What's up? It's your girl, Keyonce, spiritual life and business coach, tarot reader, spiritualist, cosmonaut based in New Orleans. Before we get started with the show, I just wanted to make a quick announcement. So I'm starting a new segment on the podcast called Hashtag Capricorn Advice. And basically, this is a way that listeners can write in with any kinds of questions about spirituality, if they're looking for any advice on any kind of life transition. This is a great way to get some free advice on the show. And so for Hashtag Capricorn Advice, I will be choosing whatever question, I'll be choosing something that someone wrote in, and I will pull a few cards pertaining to that question or advice from the seeker, and then I'm just going to do a little kiki about it. So if you have anything that you're going through right now, or any kind of questions you have about spirituality, anything like that, just write into Capricorn Advice. So you can find Hashtag Capricorn Advice on my Instagram. Just go to the link in my bio, or you can go straight to my website, which is https://. Millennial Soul Food, MillennialSoulFood wixsite.com/msf888. And there's a direct link to that on my Instagram. So yes, without further ado, I'm going to get into this show with Juju Bae. The reason I'm calling it a reunion show is because I actually met Juju Bae in Chicago some years ago while we were out. But we didn't really meet until she scheduled a reading with me, which happened to be the first month that she started the Little Juju Podcast. So I'm saying this is a reunion show because we really met each other at a particular crossroads. I was getting ready to move down here to New Orleans like a month later after that reading, and then she, less than a year later, moved to Baltimore. And so I think it was a really interesting time. And she also had me on her podcast when she was just first starting out on episode 7. And I'm grateful for that podcast because it's helped me connect with so many amazing people. Shout out to all y'all that I met through it. It's since gotten almost 8,000 plays. And I'm just forever like grateful for her for doing the work and just kind of like, I don't know, listening to her ancestors, period. So this show was really great because it gave us an opportunity to kind of reflect on that. And then I found out some new information I didn't even know about the reading that we did. So yeah, it was just a really great way to sit down and just reflect. This is just a whole kiki. We cover a variety of topics, and I think you're really going to enjoy the show. So sit back, you know, get you a little drink, you know, get you a little something. And enjoy. Thank you so much for listening.
Hello.
Hey!
Long time no chit chat.
Yes! I am so excited to be interviewing you today. Yes.
I love the crossover episodes. Come on now. Keeping crossovers.
You know, I'm doing it out here. So I didn't really want to do an episode where I'm just like asking you like, how do you do a spell? But I kind of want this to be a little, like, a reflection kind of episode, because I think I met you at a very interesting point, because I moved to New Orleans, like, you know, a month later. I actually just looked at the date of your appointment, and it was November 16th, 2018. Wow. I think it was somewhere around there. So,
November 16th, 2018? Yeah. Wow. That's the month I started my podcast.
I know! And also, I want to just talk about that reading, because I don't think I really talked to you afterwards, but I was like, I went home and took a nap afterwards. So it's like...
Right. And you dragged me.
Let's just get into it later.
Exactly. But it was like, oh, shit, she's about to change how you, like, get it together, bitch.
Your sisters were like, tell her to change her ways. I was like, I'm sorry, but they're, like, really mad right now. And I'm just like, you know, I just need a cigarette. Give me this bottle of wine.
Yep.
So then I also, I wanted to talk about Chicago. Because I feel like the first time I saw you was when I was drunk on the dance floor at Party Noir. But I don't know.
Did we talk that we met? We did.
I think I twerked on you, and then we were like, but that was when I was still in these streets. You know, I hadn't really gotten saved and sanctified. And, you know, I wasn't doing tarot or anything at that point. So, that's all about that. Okay. And then the other stuff is like, I want to talk about some psychedelics. You're the playing cards, cardomancy. Some sex magic, and then just some advice you have. Oh my god. All right, so let's get started with the show. We have Sam, aka, well, I know you as Sam, but aka Juju Bay. How are you doing today?
Hey, boo. I'm so happy to be here. How are you?
I am good. You know, it's getting really hot here in New Orleans. Like, you know, summertime starts in March. It's humid out. It's hard to breathe. So I'm just staying inside.
Please stay inside. We don't want you out if it's hard to breathe, honey.
I only go out when the dew is fresh on the grass.
Yes, dew.
That's the only time I go out. Oh my god. So what have you been up to? What's going on with you these days?
I mean, everything and nothing. I mean, we're in such a weird time in general. I've always obviously worked, well, not obviously, but, you know, working from home, but everything just feels a little bit different, and like my work is kind of shifting. So I was doing readings full time and also doing Reiki and then producing my own podcast.
Oh my god, I'm tired.
Media content stuff. I feel like I'm transitioning a little bit from sort of the healing work that I was doing to actually wanting to really put a lot of my energy into, and my spiritual work into, like, media, into just like providing resources for people instead of necessarily being the actual healer person, but like hopefully connecting people to other sources of wisdom, to other healers, to other workers, like something like that. So that's kind of what I've been up to. I'm just thinking through how I want to do that.
Oh my god, can I tell you a little bit? We were supposed to talk about this, I guess, later in the show, but we can go ahead and talk about it. I feel like this is a very, like, cyber witch phenomenon. Like, media is a way that you can, like, use language to sort of, like, rewire people's brains. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm always thinking about Octavia Butler, sci-fi shit, but it's kind of like language is a way that you, like, reach people's consciousness, and then it can, like, create a whole new connection in their brain, you know? So I think that, because I mean, since my grandmother passed back in October, that's when I decided, I was like, I need to take a break, because, and I do readings here and there, but I think it's like, it's not a sustainable practice as far as just like reading full time, because then it's like, people are like, read me. And it's like, no, I don't want to fucking read you. Please go. That's whenever you've done it too much. You know what I mean?
It's a lot. Reading is hard. And being a full-time reader, which I was for a year, I'm good. Like,
a year? Oh, my God.
On that. And I share in so much energy to people who can continue, you know, reading. And it is sustainable for them. And it works. I am not one of those people.
Can you imagine ancestors who did that? Like, for years. Like, I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's so much. It takes so much. So, you know, just having to shift a little bit from that. I think the media aspect of this work is important. And there's so many wonderful readers out there. But I know a lot of us have been taking breaks recently. So it's just time to recharge in general, I think. That feels like the energy.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Oh, my God. So let's kind of, like, I guess, like, talk a little bit about your upbringing and stuff. What were you? You were Catholic, and you grew up in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Grew up Baltimore, Maryland, born and raised. A Catholic Black girl. I feel like the pockets of Black Catholics exist in New Orleans and Baltimore. Like a large population of Black folks. And so I grew up in Catholic school from kindergarten until graduating high school.
And y'all, like, wore uniforms and stuff?
Wore uniforms in elementary, middle school. And then for high school, I went to an all-girls Catholic school. So we also wore uniforms. You know, I got taught by the nuns. And, all of that.
I mean, you are a pastor.
Catholic school is true.
You is a reverend. Handia Bosha Shabulta.
Church in class, all of that. We prayed the rosary. We had to go apologize to the priest during class.
Oh,
all the things.
Oh my God. Yeah. So whenever you were younger, because I was always interested in like metaphysics stuff, but I was kind of into the taboo when I was younger. What were you like whenever you were younger?
And what do you mean?
As far as like. What were you into? Were you kind of like, because I think you said you like, I guess, developed your gifts like later, but
I did.
What were you into? Were you like into Lizzie McGuire, or were you into like going to Hot Topic,
Okay, so I actually was a Lizzie McGuire girl, but I was
Me too.
More of a Nickelodeon child.
Oh, you were from, what about Disney?
I was more of a Nickelodeon
girl. You.
And Cartoon Network, and then I came into Disney a little bit later.
Okay.
So, yeah, I was a Nick girl. But, I think I was always interested in the metaphysical. I've always been deeply spiritual, and I was a good, quote-unquote, Catholic. Like, I prayed, I did the rosary.
Ooh.
I loved religion class. Like, I've always been, regardless of whatever my religion identity was, I did it all the way. Like, so I did Catholicism all the way, or as good as I could, until, I started to ask questions and feel uncomfortable about the answers or lack of answers that I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
But, I've always sort of been a heavy prayer, praying over my friends when I was younger, sort of laying hands on my friends if they were sick. Like, I remember doing that on the bus. So I've always kind of just been doing little stuff that was like, that's a little witchy.
Because you grew up in a pretty urban environment.
Right. I did. I mean, I'm from Baltimore, I grew up like a Baltimore child.
Yeah, because you're talking about on the bus, I was like, wow, okay, yeah, the city bus maybe. But
this was like school buses.
Oh, okay, cool.
That was my childhood. I was a little just good little Catholic witchy little girl trying to figure it out, praying to saints and things,
Yes, that's amazing. And so then I know you went to Spelman.
I did.
And then were you still kind of like a little interested in spirituality then, or what were you like in college?
Yeah, so when I went to college, I feel like my freshman year, I still identified as Christian. Actually, no, I remember I got saved again.
What?
Quote, unquote. I went to church over at Morehouse, or no, was it at Clark? One of the schools with it that's close to Spelman where I went, had church service. I went over there. I got saved, so I walked up to the front of the church and gave my life to Christ again.
What kind of church was it?
I don't even know the denomination. I don't know, but I was just moved, and the Spirit was moving me, and I was crying.
The Spirit is in the church, so.
Okay. And I just said, let me get saved. I don't know what's going on with me again. And then I think my sophomore year of college was when I went full atheist.
Whoa!
I know, the jump.
That's a boomerang.
The jam.
Before you took the whole leap.
Because I hadn't been Catholic for a little while. Like, I kind of stopped being Catholic in high school, and I didn't get confirmed, which is, like, the stage of Catholicism where you confirm that you're a Catholic, like, you know, in, like, eighth grade. I didn't do that. So I was still Christian, but I was like, I'm good on the Catholicism. I'm going to try out, you know, being Baptist. I'm going to try out all these things. And in college, I gave my life to Christ, quote-unquote, again. And then I took a psychology of religion class that completely shattered and actually answered a lot of the questions that I was asking about, you know, Christianity. And it was like, you know, like, well, obviously, like, say bye. And I just was like, nope, there's nothing. And that didn't really sit right with me either. It did for a while, but then it was like, this ain't, you know, because I am a deeply spiritual person, so I didn't have anything to answer those questions of, like, but, like, why? What more is there? And so then I started to, like, look into different traditions. I was studying Baha'i religion, which is sort of like all the religions have truth to it, and we can follow.
Yeah, that's it. They have a temple in Chicago that I went to, like, kind of regularly.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it looks like a alien spaceship. I felt like I was about to fly the fuck away. You know, I kind of went after I had smoked. And girl, I saw that shit. I was like, that shit looked like some Terminator type shit.
It does.
Like, it looked like a robot gonna come out. But then I did go to one of their conferences, and it was amazing because they based a lot of their religion on the different types of philosophies that the, like, Moses brought, Jesus, and yeah, it's, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's so cool.
So I was Baha'i for a while.
Wow, that is amazing.
And I was just studying everything. I was looking into Hinduism. I was looking into being a Jewish child. I was looking into Islam, Buddhism.
Have you studied Hermetic Kabbalah before?
No, I didn't get super into Kabbalah.
Oh, okay. That's kind of one of my main steezes.
Oh, true. I feel like in college is when I first built an ancestor altar, though. And
wow.
I didn't have any name for it. I didn't know what I was doing. I just came across it in a book that this person, it was actually Ayan Levan.
Oh, not in my house.
In the book that was like, and yeah, I had an ancestor altar and blah, blah, blah. And this is what was on it. And my grandmother always had it. And I was like, oh, I have to build one. And I just did it based off of that. No, nothing. No, I just built it because Ayanna Van Zandt talked about it for like 2 pages in her book.
And she's a priestess.
She sure is.
Ayanna.
I knew nothing about that then.
Oh yeah. Because she was kind of covert with it. And, you know, yeah. I'm into celebrity gossip and stuff and behind-the-scenes stuff about the industry. But she and Oprah, you know, had kind of had a disagreement. Did you know about that?
Yes, but I didn't know all the details. But I do remember that there was a little beef.
Yeah, it was. There was kind of a disagreement. But, oh, Ayanna, especially, I remember this one plane ride. It was after she and Oprah kind of reunited, and I listened to her interview and just basically cried for 2 hours. And then I landed in LA and I was like, whoa, a bitch is healed. Yas.
Wow.
That's me. Like, although I have all this Capricorn in my chart, I think it's like some other dynamics, but I'm good at a good cry. I know how to play the song at the right stage, you know, before the buildup, and then be like, all right, let me just.
Giving water sign energy. Love to see it.
I know, but I don't have no water signs except for one planet, which is Pluto, which didn't even exist until the before, you know, 1960s or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I'm just kind of an emotional girl. But this interview is not about me. It's about you. I think that's so interesting, though, that you went through that period kind of like atheism, because I do feel like it's important. Well, it may be a part of the process to kind of create that distance from Christianity so that you can have like the willpower without feeling guilty to like explore other kinds of religious traditions. Because I did similar. I grew up Southern Baptist, but the kind where like until I was 14, we couldn't even clap. And it was like, you know, the traditional, walk with me, Lord, walk. It was a lot of the like, moaning kind of, like, hymns, you know. I think that's because of where I'm from, which is, like, basically like 30 minutes from the Mississippi Delta, but a lot of the music was just fucking sad, you know? And then maybe whenever gospel started going a little bit more mainstream, we got a choir and we could, you know, clap when Mary Mary got a little bit popular. But I need to throw some shade at them in a little bit, though, because one of them was a trumpeteer. If it's all that I so I can name.
I don't know what's going on, Mary Mary. I know this isn't about Mary Mary, but just the questionable things over the years when celebrities start talking, you just need to keep saying.
Oh my God. But yeah, I remember I went from like, I went to Methodist and then I went to Kojic. And that's when I stayed with Kojic until like I left college. Cause I was like super into, I like spoke in tongues like a few times. Mm-hmm. But then I had some kind of bad experiences. I was in the Black Kojic church. I was in the White Kojic church. The white pastor, so the piano person, that would be funny if he ever listens to this. But I always knew that nigga was gay, period. He was like this kind of like gay black dude who was super cute and funny. And so he started dating this white woman. And she was like, I'm not trying to be shady, but she was real homely. You know, she kind of looked like she was Pentecostal, but white kind, you know, they be growing their hair out. Yes. They be looking like that woman, the Christian woman who was shouting at the camera that time. You remember that video?
Yes.
You're Satan! Yes. No!
Oh, right. Whatever it was. Yes.
And so she was like, she was very like plain, and then like to see how he was after he got out, after he came out, you know, I was like, dang, you were going through a regression, like for real or something. But she was a sweet person. I'm so Southern. She, bless her heart.
I know you did all that. You're honestly a trip. Like,
this is how my grandmother threw shade. I like, you know, I'm an old Southern black lady. But the pastor, Chan, he's sitting up there speaking in tongues and stuff. And his wife, his girlfriend wanted to get married. And the pastor was like, I don't marry interracial couples.
Oh, wow.
So after that, I was like, Chan, I can't be here no more.
Wow.
And then I kind of just stopped going to church. But it's interesting because I think it, I don't know, I think I'm definitely not atheist anymore. But it's, I think it's like, you know, we have to honor all parts of our process. And that's kind of like my reflection a little bit about the atheism stuff. And then if people are atheists, whatever, that's cool.
Yeah, I needed my atheism to be who I am now and to get where I am. If I didn't have that moment of like, because I think I may have been the annoying atheist a little bit. Like the, well, none of this shit is real anyway. Like,
ooh! Were you like, I've read the Bible more times than most church people.
Yes. Yeah, that was me. And I needed that. I needed the direct confrontation of something that I believed in deeply in order to, like, transcend into who I am now, which is where I should be. So, again, honoring all my parts, shout out to the atheists, you know.
Woo-woo. Gang, gang. So, what is your, like, moon and rising and sun sign? Don't give it all out because, you know, it's some shady hoes. I'm kidding. But what's your moon and sun and rising?
My moon is a Scorpio moon, and wow. I'm a Cancer rising and sun.
Oh, wow. Both of them. Mm-hmm. That's what's up. Mm-hmm. In the depths. Water. I always admire you because you are like, you're definitely very water sign. Like you, I admire you because you get on online and you just like speak, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm such mm-hmm. a Capricorn. I'd be like, after 2 minutes, I'm like, y'all, I'm tired. Leave me alone.
It's funny though, I've been studying a little bit of sidereal astrology. Yes. And basically in sidereal, I'm actually more air. I'm an air sign, and I would sort of be an idea of a Gemini. Mm-hmm. So I've also been toying with that. I think that's been interesting too, to think of myself in that way, but that's a whole nother tangent. But yeah.
A tangent we can get into, because you know, I'm actually studying, like, so a lot of the astrology that people know about through Instagram and stuff like that is like modern astrology, which is like, it's a form of like, it's like tropical astrology, which it's like it that developed more in like the 1960s until today. But then there's traditional astrology, which is from like thousands of years ago. And so I've been studying that, and I think it's interesting. And sidereal is, I think in India they might like use that a little bit more. But the Vedic astrologers, like, they predicted, well, I wouldn't say predicted, but they definitely had a lot of information about how things would be in 2020.
See, I'm not much of an astrology person. I leave that to the experts. But yeah, I mean, it's so much good information. Like, finding a good astrologist is like key to me, because you can really get some good information just from your birth chart.
It's
on your birthday, so.
Yes.
Shout out to the astrology girls doing that work for us.
Yes. So, another thing I wanted to talk to you about is, like, throughout your childhood and college years, what have been some important cultural works that have kind of shaped your worldview as far as spirituality and philosophy and blackness and all that kind of stuff?
Interesting question. Well, I feel like at Spelman, you know, I loved attending Spelman, you know, one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. However, I would not say that Spelman as a school, as an entity, is particularly womanist or one that truly centers the experiences of all Black women. But there were spaces important in Spelman that I was able to get that, you know, Black womanist, Black feminist understanding of who I was. As a Black woman, also figuring out who I was as a, I go back and forth with if I identify as queer or not, but as, I'll say, for lack of a better word, as a queer Black woman, and, you know, the Women's Center at Spelman sort of challenged me in, like, my misogyny, you know, in my patriarchy that I carried, all the, you know, my homophobia, just all the things that, like, we're just, it, we just grow up with, because that's just what society is. So in college, I think I was confronted with how I felt about myself, how I felt about other Black women, what were some of the stereotypes that I was carrying about Black women. And that's sort of when I also started just organizing in general. And it wasn't necessarily quote unquote spiritual stuff, quote unquote, but at the same time, I think honoring my full humanity, honoring the full humanity of especially Black women and Black femmes, it really, I think, has now propelled my spiritual work in a different space, because it's inclusive in a way that sometimes I think different Black spiritual spaces are not inclusive. And sexualities and experiences and sex workers, you know, if I didn't have that challenging moment in, at Spelman through the Women's Center, I wouldn't be able to have a complete womanist Black analysis of my spiritual traditions, and find ones that actually celebrated me for who I was and didn't shame me for who I was, if that makes sense.
So I already know, like, the definition and stuff, but what exactly is a womanist in comparison to, like, a feminist?
Right. So womanism was termed by, was
Yes, yeah, in Coming Alice Apart Walker. In 1979, yeah.
Yes, Alice Walker coined the term womanist. I was looking at a Bell Hooks book right now, so it kind of threw me off.
Yes.
But yeah, it was, it's a term created by Black women for Black women to center the experiences of Black women. So feminism, and at least mainstream feminism, is very white centered. It's very cisgender centered. It's very straight white woman. You know, white women don't make as much as white men. And Black, quote unquote, Black feminism or womanism says, like, okay, but also, like, what about the intersectional experiences of other bodies, specifically of Black women? So yeah, I try to center my work and root it in that and find spiritual traditions that understand that.
The blueprint.
Yeah, the blueprint, period.
Period. On period. Well, shit, I might be a womanist now.
Join the winning team.
I I've been with, I was raised by four black women, but what did I say? Sorry. Honestly, though,
shade popping through.
But this is true, though. Honestly, I'm one of the things I've been going through. Okay, so my Saturn return ended, but you know, Saturn went back into retrograde. Mm-hmm. My Saturn is in Capricorn, so literally, I got out that hoe and I was like, yes. And then it's like, all right, well, we're back. Okay. So, all right, good. Okay, cool. So, one of the things I have been struggling with, or not struggling with, but I've been thinking a lot about is like, I feel like black women give black men too many excuses for mediocrity. Just because you went and got a haircut, you think you should be a superstar, but then other people are out here getting bachelor's, master's, and PhDs, starting businesses. Black women are more than the man's, but then y'all think y'all deserve something because you got a lineup.
Oh God, you just gonna start to shake the table.
I'm here to play a little rough. So I do honestly, that's how I feel, you know what I mean? And I mean, a lot of gay men are very similar to, like, heterosexual black men, you know? Mm. As far as being very anti-femme. Like, I mean, I experienced, a lot of exclusion as, a femme-identified, like, cisgender male. Because it's like, you know, a girl is built, I got some muscle. But at the same time, I don't even identify as, like, femme. I feel like if there were just, like, an alien species that you could come up with and say that was their gender, that's what my gender would be. It wouldn't be, like, you're a man or you're a woman. It's more like, I don't even know. I'm just trying to operate in this body.
Right.
Like, that's all I do. And I'm excited by certain stuff, and that's it.
Right. And that should be how it is, and I think that's how it has been that way before. And so there's no reason that we can't return to a more expansive way to understand bodies and a more expansive way to understand gender and who we are and how we show up in the world.
Yeah. And I think, like, I, for some reason, attract a lot of bisexual men. Because, like, I mean, you know, it's cool, you know. I'm not about to really sit up here and watch Pornhub with you with some, like, you know, straight porn or whatever. But I do think that's, like, you know, that's an important thing for us, for the black community, black queer people, you know, because it's, like, there's stigma against bisexual people amongst, like, black gay men, you know, and I guess there's kind of fetishism on the other side, but as far as, you know, the trade.
Right.
Or, like, no, I don't want no nigga that's, like, actually attracted to men. So how do you feel about, like, bisexuality and the black community, communities?
Oh, goodness. I mean, I think as black people, there's still so many conversations that we need to engage in with each other about how we are showing up in our identity. I mean, I identify as bisexual now. I've always went back and forth with it. I've identified as a lot of things. So, like, I don't feel like we always have to be one thing either. Like,
it's not linear.
Right, like, and I was a lesbian at one point. And I also was straight. Actually, I don't know if I was ever fully straight. But I was mostly on the straight side of the spectrum for a really long time. And now I've sort of landed like, no, I'm bi. And, you know, for me, that means just being attracted to, you know, two or more genders. And so that's how I identify. And I think that it's so important for us to, those of us who can be out and are comfortable being out, just saying things like that, because I know that I read as a straight black woman.
Oof.
I read that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that I can show up in that way. And people will pigeonhole me in that way. And I love me some black men, okay? I love down. But at the same time, I think it's important for me to be like, okay, but I also don't just love them romantically or sexually. And I need y'all to know that too. And that's the space that I'm choosing to take up. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's conversations that need to happen. I think that there's a lot of shame around sex and bodies in the Black community, of course, I think we have a lot of trauma to speak about. I think we have a lot of projections that happen to queer people and trans people from cis Black people that have to do with unaddressed trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it's unfortunately going towards the wrong group, going towards the wrong thing. Like, okay, you have this trauma. It should not be projected towards queer people or LGBTQ people.
Because we out here in the streets for y'all's lazy asses.
It needs to be projected towards...
Oh, like, sorry. I'm, like, really pissed off.
Talk your shit. Like, whoever may have harmed you or, like, what the experience actually was. But, like, I feel like there's a lot of misdirection in our community. But there's a lot of people working towards it. There's a lot of people showing up. So I think that the work is happening. I mean, the work is happening literally with us talking right now. So, of course, it's there. But,
And, yeah, a lot of my stuff, because, like, me growing up, honestly, I didn't have an opportunity to even think I was straight because people literally brought it in my face that I was so different. You know what I mean? So I do feel like, because sometimes in the Black community, and like I've heard relatives say this and stuff like that, and I think a lot of people who aren't in necessarily these spaces where, you know, like for me and my friends, we like, yeah, you're gay or trans. Okay, great. Like, go right. Do you. But there are still a lot of people who exist in these kinds of environments that are very violent, and I think one very predominant kind of model of thinking, especially in reaction to like to Gabrielle Union and them, it's like, well, if that's your business, that's your business. Nobody else needs to know. You need to just your business, then that's your business. And I've even had people like, whenever I was in Mississippi, try to justify stuff like, well, you know, I don't care, but like, that's your business. And it's like, why are you trying to like relegate me to like the deviant sphere under like on the in the subway with the Ninja Turtles?
Mm-hmm. But that's that hush hush energy that I think we as a community do in so many different ways. I mean, it's not even just like, oh, I don't care if you're gay, I just don't want to see that. But it's also like, oh, this person hurt you in this way? Oh, no, they didn't. Well, just don't talk about it. Like, don't, we're not going to, I'm not going to confront Uncle So-and-so. I'm not going to confront these things. Like, we have this spirit of keeping things silent, and that is something that I've witnessed is literally going to, like, that'll be the thing that, like, really, I think, brings down a lot of us, because it has so much, like, and just not truth-telling.
It's an intergenerational tongue-binding curse.
Yes.
That's what I've been calling it, because it's like, I don't know, it keep, like, that is what perpetuates, like, you know, the down-low and stuff like that.
Yep, rape culture, all of it.
Rape culture especially, and I mean, and a lot of, like, gay men experience rape, too.
Yep.
Thankfully, I haven't, but, like, I have been able to tell sort of, like, I could feel spirit to, like, cause you know, I have been sexually active, you know, especially when I was living in Chicago and I was, you know, kind of in my mid-20s, you know, but I could feel sometimes whenever I was talking to people about like, you know, what are you into? I could feel a spirit where it was like, they are going to try to rape me. Cause it's like, a lot of times it's like, I'm the kind of queer person, or like in queer culture, especially with more femme identified people, we're more into like oral stuff, you know, it's not like, penetrate me. So it's like, a lot of times if you with a dude and it's like you're not trying to like get them off, then they get pissed off, you know what I mean? And it's like, well, what the, and then that's like a situation where a lot of people experience like sexual assault. So definitely that, it's just like, it's a weird kind of like, I don't know, it's the curse. Damn, that got deep. I'm like, really, my heart is beating fast.
That did get deep, because it's making me think about, I don't know if you've ever felt this when you've been engaging with someone, like, sexually or romantically, but you can almost actually feel the spirit of their sexual trauma there.
What?
And they may not have ever said it to you.
Yes! Oh, my God!
You can, like, ooh, you have a lot of sexual trauma that I don't know if you've even thought much about, had to sit with, and that you've completely pushed away, but I see it on you, and that's also something that I've been dealing with.
This is a Kiki, but I wanted to talk to you about this pivotal moment that I met you in whenever I was in Chicago, because I mean, I did your reading in November, later November, around like 16th through 20th. I need to check the exact date, but I didn't realize like within the span of a year that like six or seven other people that I knew who lived in Chicago would be moving away. So I don't know. I feel like there is some kind of like collective like realization in that, mm-hmm. especially because you were in the activist community with BYP, and then I like participated in this like pride parade protest where we like held up the parade for like 23 minutes. I think that was in 2015.
Okay.
And so I feel like there's this like wave of people in Chicago who are involved in activism but also spiritual work. And mm-hmm. then I don't know. I think for me, I couldn't be there anymore because there's just like there's a lot of trauma. One, because I have family that moved up there with the Great Migration. And right. then, like, you know, Chicago's full of, like, Black Mississippians. So mm-hmm. I was having a lot of realizations about warrior spirits. And, like, because, I mean, my grandmother, like, I grew up with her. And she would just tell me stories about how people was just getting killed. And the cops didn't care. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, interesting to think about how moving up to Chicago, there's still that kind of same environment, but it's perpetuated by, like, systemic inequality, you know?
Right.
So it's like they were trying to, like, leave for a more prosperous future. But then I'm looking at my cousins in Chicago. I'm like, shit, I'm glad I stayed in Mississippi. So I think
that's a very interesting. That's an interesting realization, too.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, because, I mean, Chicago, it's like, them some hard niggas.
Yeah.
But then it's like, it's just interesting. They come from like Mississippi, and I have an uncle. He was my grandmother's brother, and he moved up to Chicago from Mississippi in the 1930s. There's a long story between like how my grandmother and her sister and him got like separated. So like they got kidnapped, my grandmother's sister and brother. And then they had a really hard life, whereas my grandmother, like, grew up in a two-parent household. And she was a sharecropper, but it was more like, it wasn't working middle class, but for that time, it was, like, kind of all right, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then just to see how the trauma played down from whenever, because they both moved up to Chicago eventually. And my grandmother told me, like, she was, like, because his name was Willie, and Uncle Willie, he was, like, going up to Chicago on the railroad was, like, a traumatic experience, you know, like, traveling up that way. So just thinking about how many, like, that's the history of a lot of the people's ancestors that moved up there yeah. from the 1920s to, like, the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of just, like, I feel, I don't know, I feel, like, calmer here in New Orleans. There's a lot of dead spirits here, like, you already know. Oh, but yeah. I feel like at peace with them. But in Chicago, it was just kind of like I wasn't connected to the land. And then also it was a different kind of trauma. I'm not used to yeah. urban trauma, you know. I mean, right. I grew up around the KKK, but it's like it's different because in the South you have the land. Whereas in Chicago, right. it was like I'm not used to all that concrete. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the land brings healing. I think it's really an interesting point of you talking about like how our ancestors, many of them, you know, migrated to the North for a better life. And then often places that they migrated to, it was just a new set of issues and problems that they may not even have experienced in the same way had they remained in the South. And this is in the, you know, I think our ancestors chose what they needed to do for themselves and for their descendants and, mm-hmm. you know, chose what was best. But it's such a, like, that's so true. Like, my people came to Baltimore from the Carolinas, mostly also Virginias and Alabama, for a better life. And, you know, most people, when they hear Baltimore, they think of probably trauma or mm-hmm. like pain, you know, high murder rates, abandoned homes, you know, and that's a reality. So, you know, what actually is better? You know, what would have been better? Like, it's hard to say, but, like, I think that's just such a good, like, I don't know. That just did something when you
Yeah, and I mean, I think, girl, I did so much. And I also, Because I don't know if you know, but I went to University of Michigan, got my master's in sociology, and my thesis was on Chicago. It was on, like, the history and, like, the it was, like, on the economic development of the gay community and all this other kind of stuff. But it was a lot about the culture of Chicago. And I'm, like, so cerebral. Like, my Mercury is in this 12th house. But, like, it's, I, like, am always in my head and just kind of, like, I had so many moments where, you know, when you have those spiritual moments where you're like, I'm everything. Mm-hmm. Like, that happened to me so much. I was like, Lord, I gotta leave this place. Cause it would, like, it would happen and then I would just dive into these, like, deep depressions. Like, February, like, I would say whenever I did your reading or whatever, I was at the point, I was like, if I stay here for another February, I'm gonna commit suicide. Cause I just can't. The February is, like, we're just too much. Mm-hmm. Especially with, like, the energy of Chicago and stuff like that. I was like, I gotta go. I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
What was I talking about? But yeah, it is interesting. But I think us moving up there, like, house music was created in Chicago. And I was, like, a house girl. Like, you could catch me at Chosen Few, period, every year.
I went to
all the Southside, like, house festivals and stuff like that. So I feel like whenever I was in Chicago, I held a lot of, like, ancestral anger. Because I was like, oh, so y'all moved up here from Mississippi thinking y'all. Because, I mean, growing up, Northerners would visit and they'd be like, hi, yeah, my name is blankety blank. I speak really fast and I pronounce all my words. And we'd be like, you ain't shit.
Yeah.
And so, like, moving up to Chicago, I was like, because, I mean, I had an all right life in Chicago. And I was like, y'all moved up here for this? But then I was like, let me quit being an asshole and, like, really explore the culture and stuff. And I appreciate it as in the house music. I love house music so much. And I really appreciate just the ways that, I guess, that industrial age kind of helped magnify Black culture, you know?
Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm.
Damn, I'm, like, fucking really emotional right now.
Aww.
But so what period were you in, like, whenever I, like, met you? I think that was in 2018. What were you, like, going through? What was your experience like in Chicago?
Oh, I definitely needed Chicago. I'll just say that. Like, I needed to move there. I needed to move there alone. I needed to go to grad school and then drop out a year in and then be in debt. Like, I needed...
Where did you go?
I went to Adler.
Oh, yeah.
University for clinical psychology for a doctoral program. And I had dropped out. I'm sorry about that.
Damn, I dropped out of a doctoral program too. What the Anyway, and keep going.
It just, when you met me, I'd actually started my podcast that I had.
Yes.
probably 2 weeks before the reading. I had just put out the first episode.
I did not know that.
Yep.
What?
Yep, I started the podcast November of 2018. I think it was on the 6th.
Oh my God.
Week of the 6th. So that was like, I just started a little Juju podcast. I didn't know what it was going to be. I had recently broke up with my partner of like 2 years or a year. I don't even know how long we've been together, child. We had recently broken up and I was just confused. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know. I mean, I was at BYP 100, you know, still organizing there, but I knew that it was going to be time for me to leave soon. And I think when you read me, it was pretty much like, yeah, girl, like, everything's about to change. Like, everything that you think that you know right now, yeah, you don't know nothing. And all of that is going to get snatched away and replaced. And I was like, okay. And what happened? Everything was snatched. You know, I just lost my partner. I lost my best friend. Just everything that I was looking for and grasping for and trying to find stability in was gone.
It was definitely a shadow reading.
Yes.
I was like, girl, give me this bottle and give me this whole pack of cigarettes.
Yes. And we was drinking down and it was just like, you just read me and I felt like you honestly represented this energy of like, an Eshu and Elegua, and for folks who don't know, it's sort of just the spirit or the Orisha that exists between like you know, the spirit realm and the earthly realm, you know, the one that kind of calls us to make decisions and, you know, issues like there, like, okay, you're at a crossroads. Which way are you going to go? You can do this. Everything can go away. You can have this life, or you can continue the life that you've been living. And you came and you had on the colors of Eshu. I remember you had on.
Are you serious?
You had black and red on, and you came and just basically laid the cards out and read me and was like, okay, this is going to be your choice. If you go this way, it's this. If you go that way, it's that.
I wore that black and red sweater.
Yeah, you had a black and red sweater on.
Oh, my God.
I was like, not this Eshu energy up in here with the weed.
I'm coming up in. You want to smoke real quick? I'm like, oh, let's do da 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 da. And then the reading's like, bitch, you better look.
And yeah, and it was like, you're going to move, you know, you're going to really take off. Like, she's going to take, if you choose that, you can take off.
But I feel like if you hadn't done that, your life was going to be fucking hell. Like, that's the energy that was coming through. It was like, I was like, girl, I'm sorry, but I need to say a curse word or two. Like,
it was hell. That's the thing. Like, it was absolutely hell. And it was like, I couldn't even latch. It wouldn't allow me to latch onto anything but my own work and my spirit or you. Because, like, you came in and gave me all this information. That was my first time really connecting in person. You came to my house and read me. And then you're like, oh, yeah, and I'm about to move. So it's not even like we can be friends here. And I was like, but you just. I can't even latch onto you, really. And, like, of course we stayed in contact and everything, but it was just like, oh, wow, I have choices to make.
That is, it was the wave, girl.
Yep, it was.
Because, I mean, I was going through my own shit, so that's just interesting because, like, I mean, you know, with spiritual work, I don't even identify myself as being, like, oh my God, I like gave her a reading. It's just like, I was a channel at a certain time and place, you know what I mean? And that experience taught me, I was like, child, let me take some other precautions, because I was like, shit, I'm tired. Like, and it's funny, because, like, I turned the last card over, and I like, hold energy in my sacral root chakra around that area, and this energy just, like, left whenever I turned the last card over, and then I didn't even feel, like, drunk or anything like that. I was just like, all right, all right, I gotta go. So,
yep.
Peace.
Yep, that was it. Bye.
And it was like a kiki because you booked a whole hour reading.
Yep.
But damn, that was so funny.
Read me down to the ground.
And then we met up in New Orleans. But you were sick at that time.
Oh, yeah, when I came to New Orleans. Yep. And then that's when I recorded your episode on the podcast, which is one of the earlier episodes. Like, you were on the show at the very beginning.
I know. And I feel like
interview.
Yeah. So, and also, can I tell you, you interviewed me on the 7th episode, which is my, like, life path number.
That's so interesting.
And it's interesting because, like, I mean, you know, I don't fucks with a lot of people. So people hear about me through your episode. Because it's gotten, like, 7,000 plays, and, like, it's just interesting. I was the 7th episode, moved here, and, you know, I've met a lot of amazing people through that episode, because they just come here. Aww. Or, you know, they'll be, like, it's at least over 20 people.
Wow.
And it's, like, they come here, they're, like, hey, I'm in New Orleans, like, what's up? You know, I'm a Capricorn, so when people hit me up the day of, I'm, like, sorry, girl, I got 10 things planned out. You hit me up at 12. Girl, you already know. I tell you my sign online, right. Girl. The fuck? Like, you already know how I am. But people who hit me up in a timely manner, like, we get together. You know, we go to City Park. I, like, show them some stuff, like, you know. And then we go eat some good food. And then chill out. And we do a reading. And it's been really cool. I've met some, like, really amazing people just through that episode. And also, I think it was great because that's, like, the first time I really talked about my history with psychedelics and stuff. Because, I mean, I think, so I actually went through my own kind of initiation when I was, like, 21. I think I told you about this maybe on the podcast a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. But that was the first time I really talked about, like, psychedelics and then, like, you know, Pleiadians. I'm, like, star seed ancestors. Because, you know, a lot of the, like, the Dogon tribe in Africa, like, worship, like, a star, the Sirius star, which they say that's where a lot of, like, information comes as far as, like, breakthroughs in technology and all that kind of stuff. I personally have had, like, a lot of, I did DMT one time. I think I told you this, but realized that I was kind of a part of, like, the Pleiadians, sort of. But this is like super important stuff to think about. But that episode was just really cool because I met other Black people who were like, oh, well, I've done this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to talk to you about that a little bit as far as like psychedelics and stuff, because I have recently gotten into like microdosing, because in college I would be like, yeah, let's take a lot of shrooms.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, let's travel. And I think it was important because, like, the kind of psychedelic experimentation I did in college, I will never do that again. It was just a lot. But microdosing is very manageable, and I think, especially as Black people, and we discover that the Matrix isn't really very safe, you know, we have to turn inward. Like, the whole program is inside us.
Right.
So what do you think about, like, shrooms and programming and stuff?
So what do you think about shrooms and programming? So recently, shrooms has been my medicine. It has been the one that I've intentionally been engaging with probably for not long, the past few months.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've done it before in college, but it was more like, okay, yeah, time to take some shrooms.
But when you grown, it's different.
But where I am now, I was microdosing a lot a couple months ago. Like, I was microdosing every day. I haven't been doing that so much, but I did have a really, really, really impactful shroom trip probably like 3 weeks ago.
What?
And it was just what I needed, and it opened up something in me that has not closed yet, which is good. But the shadow work that I've been needing to do was... the shrooms had to unlock it 3 weeks ago. And it was one of the most transformative experiences that I've ever had in my life. It showed me all of the ways that I victimized myself when I may not have been the victim. It showed me all the ways that I was lying to myself. I mean, it was the ego death. Like, ego
Dang. Gone.
And so I've had to, and I cried my eyes out. You know, it was a good shroom.
Of course, that's a good, when you cry, you gotta cry.
Listen, it was the ugly shroom crying, writing. It was apologizing to people. It was taking accountability, and that part of me has not closed yet. So every day, I think since that trip, I've had to be accountable for something, my feelings, my insecurities, how I projected them. I've had to apologize to loved ones. You know, like, I'm in the process of being in, like, a fight with someone who I deeply love because of some shit that I projected. Like, and I have to sit with that and own that and be honest with it. So I love plant medicine. I think it's necessary. And I want to be a part of, I guess, a community where we can talk about this amongst Black people, because I think with Black folks, it's still kind of like, oh, you doing drugs?
Yeah, right. Like, she tripping out.
Spiritual stuff, but you're doing drugs. And it's like, okay, we can decolonize our ideas around plant medicine.
We have to
engage with plant medicine, and we still engage with plant medicine. It's not bad, quote unquote. It's an opportunity to find out more about yourself, period.
Yeah, period. I mean, I already told you about my experiences with plant medicine and stuff, but I think it is very important, especially like, so during the quarantine, for instance, I've been microdosing and stuff like that. I guess I've done it like 5 times in the past like month and a half. One time I like microdosed and watched the whole trilogy of The Matrix. So you already know. I don't know why I enjoy this, but I enjoy the high of like getting too much sensory overload. So, but I mean, I think it's important, especially just like, I don't know. I was saying this last year, I felt like 2020 was going to be a lot, but I don't even really think that we're at the tipping point of like what it's really going to be like, especially for like Black people and historically marginalized populations. And I don't like to sound like doom and gloom, but I'm kind of just trying to be like, y'all, get your mind right, you know, like stop tuning into the media. If there's a critical emergency, I'm going to get a text message from the state of New Orleans being like, leave your house. You know what I mean? Or something like that. And then, but otherwise, it's like, we are living in such a, like, progressive technological age that there's so many different ways that we're being, like, influenced into patterns of behavior, you know, that don't, they don't allow you to go within, and they kind of try to make you think all the content is outside, when it's like, no, actually, all the content you need is on the inside, you know?
Yes, it is.
Like, it's lit. It's lit.
To get what we need. We really don't. It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there. It really is. And it's so, like, woo-woo to say that, but it's really not. Like, if you just take some time to sit with yourself, even the nasty parts, you're going to get some answers that you've been looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And some realizations and opportunities to change.
Yeah, and then also it's like, I mean, because I have my altar, because it's like, I think of altars as like spatial programming. So it's like, you're like creating a space that, like, when you see it, it influences like your whole vibe. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I'd be going up to, I mean, I kind of just did it earlier this morning. Crying at the altar.
Yeah.
Crying at the party. But it's like, that is like a ritual, and it's important, but also like the altar is in you, you know? And I remember I, like, after I first moved here, I had a dream about that or whatever, and I was like, okay, I take it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It is about us. It is, and the altar is us too. I mean, I talk a lot about ancestral work, and, you know, we are the ancestors as well. Like, our ancestors literally live through our bodies and through our experiences, because just scientifically, we are a compilation of a bunch of, you know, a lot of dead people. So, you know, taking care of yourself and going inward is also doing the ancestral work as well, and the healing work for a lineage when you take care of you.
So I guess to switch gears a little bit, I wanted to talk to you about your cartomancy. Is that how you say it? Cartomancy?
Cartomancy
practice, because, you know, I'm a tarot girl, been a tarot girl for over 12 years, but you use the playing cards, and I mean, you know, I grew up playing cards in college, and, you know, that also, you know, before I went to college, that was what the sinners did, because it was, you know, kind of taboo. You know, y'all over here drinking Crown Royal and playing spades and smoking cigarettes. That was my granddad.
Right, what in the secular?
You know, they got the car door open to, like, the car or whatever. I was trying to think of, like, an old school Cadillac.
Right.
One of those, like, songs where they, like, she leaving me for Stacy. She don't know where I'm going. You know?
Just country shit.
You know? Yes.
Just country shit.
But how do you, like, just is there, like, a system with the playing cards as far as, like, doing that type of divination?
Yeah, there is a system, I think, and I mean, one could look it up and see, like, oh, okay, a king of diamonds is the same as a blah, blah, blah in tarot, and that's how I would interpret it. You know, that does exist, and there are a lot of good breakdowns online for cartomancy, but I think with any sort of divinatory practice, it really is about what your spirit tells you each card means. You know, I might see a queen of diamonds that comes up for somebody and feel and see it means a certain thing, and then for somebody else, the queen of diamonds means something else completely. So yes, it is about, like, the general understandings, but it's really about, like, what spirit is telling you about each card, and that's how I read, you know.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm like, okay, three means this general thing, like a one means this general thing, but what does it mean against these other cards? What are the questions? What is it saying about this person? So it's more intuitive, a more intuitive reading of those cards.
That makes total sense. Yeah, because, I mean, I've been staring at these cards, you know. I remember seeing you on Instagram, you, like, put your cards up and they're, like, brown. I'm like, my cards are too, and it's like, but I always see new stuff in the cards. So, I mean, I think that is important, Especially in this age where there's kind of an oversaturation of information that, yeah, like, you need to just trust your intuition. Like, yes. And then, I mean, I am a theory head. I love some, like, you know, give me a theoretical model for what the tarot mean. I love all the occult theory and all that kind of stuff. But at the base of it, it's like you are interpreting, it's like your mind's interaction with that template is like kind of between that interaction, you somehow channel spirit and say the message.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's, I think that's so cool. I love it. Yes. Well, one of the last topics I wanted to kind of talk to you about is sex magic. And because specifically, I have had readings with clients where I feel like I'm not really one to give advice about it, but I'm like, something's up with your yoni. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, you need to be having, like, I don't know if it's better orgasms for personal power, you know, mm-hmm, or orgasms that aren't connected to a person. Or, like, you know, I feel like it's, yeah, like I can feel that they're giving their yoni away too much.
Yes.
So,
yeah, no, that's real.
Yeah, and I don't have a vagina, and so it's, yeah, like interesting for me, because then I'm like, girl, you need to go see another reader.
Yeah, who can really get into what's going on?
Yeah, what do you think about that? I know you have an episode that's called Orgasms as Portals. What's your relationship with the sexuality and stuff like that?
Well, like I said before, I was raised Catholic, and I think one of the most detrimental things for me in my experience with Catholicism was all the sexual shame and sexual trauma that was placed onto my body without my consent as a Catholic. So, you know, hearing things like, obviously sex is bad, obviously you wait until marriage, but also like, and if you don't, you're going to hell, you know, that being very explicit, or if you masturbate, you're going to hell.
Oh,
and just hearing that over and over and over again has been something that I'm still trying to take, like a narrative that I'm still trying to break in my head.
Ugh, same, girl. Same, sis.
And I'm grown.
Same. You
know, I still be like, oh, I can't. There's still something sometimes that feels nasty.
Or like you're being watched.
Or like you're being watched and you're just doing something bad.
Like they know I'm doing this.
Yeah, you just feel like you're sinning.
Even the ancestors, I'd be like, let me not do this in front of my altar.
Yeah, I try not to do it for the
moment. I don't do that. No, I was just like, even being, you know, whatever. Even like, so, you know, whatever. Sorry.
But no, it feels, it can feel like, or just, it just feels, it's just this shame.
Yeah.
So it's been working through the shame. And so that's why I love sex magic so much, because it's just an opportunity. It's literally reprogramming, really, of understanding like my own power. Understanding the power that my body has, understanding the power that orgasm has, understanding that I can like create a reality through the energy of sex, whether that's sex with somebody else or sex with myself. Like, there's an intentional, like we can just do things with intention, including fuck, to be able to like get what we want out of situations. And I think that people use sex to get what they want out of all the time, and it might not necessarily be seen as quote unquote sex magic, but people use sex to get what they
I feel like, yeah, it's kind of more like an unconscious thing whenever people are doing it. Or like, you know, whenever like people having sex, I feel like a lot of, I don't know, people having sex with people, it's like they manifest a lot of stuff, but sometimes aren't really aware of why it's being manifested.
Right, or manifesting things that they actually don't want.
Exactly.
It's coming along with whoever you're having sex with or what you're thinking about.
And I feel like women especially don't understand sometimes like how powerful it is, you know what I mean?
I think a lot of at all. I mean, but where will we learn that? Like, who is telling us, like, oh, yeah, you know, that nut is powerful, girl. Go ahead and do it. You know, no one's saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not conversations. I mean, there's people doing powerful work. You've had LaVon P on here, who does a lot of work around that.
Yes.
I'm trying to do work around it, too.
Check her out on the previous episodes.
Yes. So it's really about trying to just decolonize my own shame around sex, and it's worked at the end of the day. Like, I've gotten what I've wanted from doing sex magic.
Mm-hmm. So I know there's like sigil magic. That's like the kind that I basically do. Like, girl, before I left Chicago, I was drawing up all the sigils, and I was like, I was like, I need money right now. What kind of symbol can this form? But I think it's like, I feel sigils, that is one of like the kind of like occult 101 theory things. And I think like on Instagram, you know, people like spells and da 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 da. But I like really like to think about like the metaphysics behind it, you know, like, because it's literally like you create a sentence and then like, or an intention, and like the orgasm, you're already altering your consciousness to a point where it like kind of like internalizes it.
Yeah.
Be on levels beyond like your physical body, you know?
Right.
So it's like, if you're trying to have an orgasm for money, it's going to work because the orgasm's a portal that connects you to something more than what your physical body is. You know what I mean? It's like, this is some shit that reverberates through like astral levels and stuff.
Right. Because essentially it's like when you are in a moment of orgasm, that's probably one of the only moments in our lives where we have very little inhibition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing that can really, when you orgasm, like, that's just a peak state of like ecstasy, of like a portal just being open, of just the possibilities being endless. And every other moment in life where I was like, oh, I can't do that. Oh, who's going to think this? But when you kind of, when you're coming, you don't think about all that.
You're like, yeah!
It feels good. So why not just intentionally put something in that moment that you can like celebrate or be happy for or want to manifest when your inhibitions are just gone?
Because a lot of it is lusting for like, I don't like to say the wrong thing, but I mean, even alluding back to earlier in the episode, it's like lusting for things that kind of trigger your own internal trauma.
Right.
That's like a lot of what our relationship with sex is. Like, you know, with the gay community, wanting the masculine man being the prototype, but actually he's like the person who probably raped a few people in the family and says a lot of homophobic shit and doesn't like women.
Right.
Or, you know, is a hateful asshole. So that comes through, you know, in these sexual archetypes.
Yep. It sure does.
So it's like, you got to watch out who you having sex with. It's not just like, you know, get stigmatized. It's a real thing.
It is.
But it's like, I think we need to put a little spin on and let people know, you know, sometimes you just ain't ready.
Right. And that's okay.
It's okay. Like, for me, I mean, I don't, I don't know. I have definitely, had situations where I know people have made me act a certain way, and then I'm like, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's the physical.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep. Gotta be mindful. Gotta be mindful, honey.
Oh my god. So what's in the future for you? What are you like working on right now?
Oh goodness. I feel like this question keeps coming up from myself.
Really?
Like, I don't know. What the hell? I might need a reading, honey. I might need another reading from you because I don't know. I think, like I said before, you know, I'm just focusing a lot on, like, how to create spaces that people can access more information about, you know, African traditional religions and hoodoo, and in a way that is safe and that is not putting out, like, you know, the secrets, the very real secrets of these traditions. Mm-hmm. But like making it more, and just accessible and just having candid conversations about the work from other people who I respect who are doing the work. So,
well, I
was just going to say, I think that's just going to continue, hopefully in different mediums, you know, beyond the podcast and, you know, trying to get my YouTube up and just, you know, I'm thinking through some things like that, you know.
This is a little, an impromptu sort of kind of reading, but I definitely, the planets, you know, it's like Uranus and Taurus, like, you need to focus on the technology, focus on, like, creating an archive that's going to be around for, like, you think, like, you know, 20, 2356, people are going to know about It's Juju Bang. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, understanding how to, like, spread the message, but also archive it.
Right.
Is important.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yes!
I've received that. So, yeah, confirmation.
You got to keep up the media stuff, though.
I know.
Especially because there's going to be a million readers. Mm-hmm. So, it's like, you know, I be just posting people on my Instagram, like, go get a reading from this person. Go get a reading from this person. Because there's a lot of people. And I think also this is, it's like, I do honestly feel like there's different kinds of psychic abilities. And I think certain people do have certain abilities. But I think there's more people with those abilities than people are aware of right now. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone isn't a muggle.
Right.
So, and right. I think there's more people, I think there's more non-muggles than we realize.
I think all of us, a lot of us have certain gifts that just have been unrealized or just not tapped into. I think majority of us do, actually. And mm-hmm. it just takes the time to, like we were talking about before, going inward to discover it. I mean, a lot of people in readings will ask, like, oh, what's my gift? And it's like, your gift can be whatever you want it to be. Like, you just got to sit with it. You have to study it. Like, what do you think your gift is? Mm-hmm. Work with it. Like, it's not, I'm not a special, I mean, not that I'm not special. We're all special in our own ways, but I'm not any more special than somebody that I'm reading or necessarily more gifted. I just study, you know, mm-hmm. I just take time, and we can all do that. Like, we're really not all muggles. A lot of us, I think there's less muggles than there are, than we think.
Exactly. Especially people listening to this podcast. I feel like if you even click this podcast, you probably qualify as you probably are not you're a non-muggle. Well, I love that. Thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be on your show and you being one of my first guests. Like, it's just a whole vibe. Oh, look at the universe.
Full circle in the global pandemic.
Right, okay.
Oh my God. Okay, well, thank you so much. Oh my God, what an amazing episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you don't already follow Juju Bay, go follow her on IG at A Little Juju Podcast. That's AlittleJujuPodcast. She also has a Patreon with some amazing content up. Go listen to episode 7, my episode with her. I think she has over 40 episodes out now. So go check her out. And then if you haven't already, go follow me on Instagram at millennialsoulfood.com or millennialsoulfood at millennialsoulfood. And then also, like I mentioned earlier, if you're interested in writing to the advice column, hashtag Capricorn Advice, go to my Instagram or go to my website and write in. Let's get this going. Let's go. Let's get it going, baby. Okay, so that's all for me. I am wishing you the best. Go out there. Don't let Satan defeat you today. Hallelujah. All right, love y'all. Bye.